Welcome to the podcast from Stazza Stable, The Stable Master Speaks. My name is John Starrett, aka The Stable Master. And as regular listeners know, this podcast is not scripted in any way, shape or form. It's not edited, so all the mistakes stay in. We don't do all the patron stuff or the sponsorship or give me money. In fact, quite the opposite. We give away probably the best prizes of any running podcast on the planet. And the evidence is all there. We've already given away two-week trips to the Caribbean, two-week trips to the tropical island of Mauritius, and four pairs of super shoes. And we're going to carry on in that vein as well with, I suppose you have to stay tuned towards the end of the podcast because at the competition to end all competitions. I think you're going to like it. I suppose as well you're all wondering where I've been since August. Well, obviously a bit in Mauritius, but right now I'm back in Ireland. So what we're going to do with this podcast is we're going to have a little look back at where we left off and what's happened since August, what I'm doing now in Ireland and what I'm going to be doing come the beginning of July, and also talk about the content that we're going to be going through for the, I suppose, from now till December. So let's fire back then to August. I just moved out of the apartment in Grand Bay in Mauritius to the villa, which was a great move, really. It meant I was no longer in kind of holiday mode. I was away from the restaurants and things, and I could knuckle down and crack on with the book, which I did do. One of the great things about being in Mauritius was being 4 hours ahead of the UK and Europe, and then even further ahead than the US. It enabled me to have like 4 hours in the morning to, you know, get some admin work done, get the book done. And I've now got the third draft of the book done. And I'd say I'm 90% happy with the content, not so happy with the narrative voice because it's a bit clunky and a bit choppy changey. So some of it's the Stable Master Speaks voice, some of it's my writing voice that I use for joking around, and then some of it's more kind of technical and serious. So I've got to work on finding that sort of balance and keeping it the same all the way throughout, which is quite a difficult job to do. But I'm just having a little break from the book at the moment, and when I head off again in July, that's when I'll be working on it, because again I need the time in the mornings to do that. Where am I heading off to? Stay tuned. So, yeah, managed to get the book done in the mornings. And then I was doing all my calls and things in the afternoon from the coaching, which was great. And life was pretty simple. And I had, if you remember, there's a guy called Mackenzie. He was a chef in the bar. And he'd been working for 6 days a week, getting paid €300 a month for like 10 hours a day. So I asked him if he wanted to come and work with me, so do a bit of cooking and run some errands for me and things, so I could stay at home and then get the work done. And that worked out really, really well. So I got Mackenzie a scooter, and I would just give him a call each day, and he'd go to the shop and pick up the stuff that I need, come over, have a chat and stuff for half an hour, and then zip off. So it was giving me a little bit of company in the weeks as well. And then in the evening, I'd watch the football, so I got sorted out with the old satellite TV, and we'll come back to the football in a minute. And think life was pretty hunky-dory the way it should have been. And then with Mackenzie, what Mackenzie would do, he'd bet on the football every single day, you know, or football all over the world, but not a lot. He'd put like a euro and do these big tickets with like 13 games and first team to score and all this sort of stuff. And I kept telling him he was mad until one day he won, I think it was about €1,500 off a euro bet. So I thought, oh, I might have a little bit of this myself. Now, I don't normally bet. I might, once in a blue moon, I might have a bet if the World Cup's on, like say the World Cup rugby or World Cup football, but I don't bet on horses and things like that. Maybe a little bit on the boxing too, but I probably count on two hands the number of times I've been in the bookies and had a bet. So I started, I had a little bit of time, so I studied the form with the football and things, and I thought I'll give this a little go. So I said to myself, okay, I'll have €10, each bet will be a €2 bet. And I worked out I'd go on the scores in the games, exact scores, which I know is pretty difficult. But in the past, when I've had a bet on football, I've done quite well when I've had a little lash at that. So I remember it was almost like the first, I think it was the first time I had a bet. I had five games. And in fact, what had happened was we'd been out on the Friday night because Mackenzie had this money and he had a big party. So we went out, and I remember getting a taxi to go home from a restaurant, a little bit tipsy, and going to an ATM machine, and I couldn't remember my PIN code, and the machine ate my card, and I had no money. And the taxi driver wasn't too pleased, and I didn't have any money at home, or I thought I didn't have any money at home. But the taxi driver was kind enough to drop me off, and I said, look, I'll sort him out the next day. But I was thinking, how am I going to do that? Because my card's in the machine. And So I woke up in the morning and I realised that I have a little bit of a stash of money there as well. And I'd had a bet on the football. So I decided to go in to go and watch the football and have a few drinks and something to eat, and was trying to work out how I was going to get a new card and get money out from the bank. So I was thinking to myself, if I go to the bank on Monday, you know, they might be able to give me the card back. So I wasn't too concerned. Anyway, it transpired that the bet that I had came in. So I had like five. What did I do with the football? I would pick three games, all the same games. So it might say be Arsenal v Liverpool, Arsenal v Man United, Arsenal v Man City, something like that. You know, three easy wins for Arsenal. But obviously it'd be three different teams. So it'd be good to Arsenal, Liverpool, it might be Spurs, Brighton. You could get the picture. And where I started off with this, because a lot of people were asking me about this, is I noticed there was a little bit of a pattern. Spurs were scoring two goals a game, normally winning 2-0. Arsenal were normally winning 2-0 or 2-1. Brighton were normally winning 3-1, 3-0. So I worked out this kind of pattern. And so I picked my three matches and played around with the scores. And I would start off with what the odds were with the bookies, you know. So if Arsenal were, say, playing, I don't know, Liverpool, and the bookies were, the lowest odds were 1-1, then I would bet with that as my starting point. So Man City were playing Man United and they said 1-1, I'd bet with that. And then, I don't know, if Juventus were playing Napoli or something, and they said it's going to be 1-1, then I would start from that. And then I would try and work out in my head where I thought it was going to go. Anyway, I remember sitting there late afternoon, well, it was in the evening time, actually, and it came in. I remember watching the final game, and I can't remember the games and the scores and that, but it was a high-scoring game, and within in extra time, it nearly changed, but did, fortuitously for me, it stayed the same. And off the €2 bet, although I put €2 bets down, I won €2,400, I think it was. So that was happy days. Had to go down to Port Louis, the capital of Mauritius, to pick up the money. And that had me sorted. So in the end, what I decided to do was to get my bank card sent to my brother's address, because he was coming out in 3 weeks' time. He could bring the card out and then happy days, everything would be sorted. And that's how it worked. So that was great. So then I decided to, what I'd do is on Friday, Saturdays and Sundays, I'd start to have a little bet on the football, and just make it makes the week a little bit more interesting, something to think about during the week. And then come in, meet Mackenzie, and have a meal and a few beers and stuff like that, watch the football and then go home, and just breaks the, you know, everything up. And one of the other good things about being in Mauritius was, as well, I was well ahead on the work front because of having more time in the mornings. So I would get my weekly training pretty much polished off by the Friday and just need to edit it on the Sunday before sending it out to everybody. So that was all working quite well. And then over the next sort of 3 months or so, I think I won probably in the region of about €6,000 just off the same format of betting on, you know, with €10, €2 on each bet. What did I lose? Because everyone says, yeah, but you don't tell about the losing. Yes, I lost a few times, well, quite a few times, but not much money. I suppose out of this, for winning the 6,000, I probably lost maybe 100, €200. So it was a good return. But what happened, why I didn't carry on with the betting, was the game started to go funny. I remember there was a game Newcastle were playing, and I think they won 7-0 against somebody, I can't remember, something like that. And then a lot of the other games started to turn, they weren't going to form, players were getting injured, and it was really difficult to predict. So I just stopped betting altogether, and I haven't bet since then. So I know a lot of people wanted to know the background to that, so that was the sketch then. And in fact, when my brother came out at the beginning of October, he was there for 2.5 weeks. I didn't have a bet at all when he was out, because we were going out to restaurants every single night, really. So, and having a, you know, there was no need, really, you know, to go and do the betting. And then after he left, stablemate Nicky Woodward and the family came out for 2 weeks. And I moved out of the villa and down to the beachfront, stayed there while they were in the villa, linked up with them a few times, had a great holiday, which was fantastic. And in fact, we had a bet then because Nicky's husband had a bet on the football, and so did I. I think he won, actually. He did. I think we both won. And it wasn't a big win, though. So, but that was kind of interesting as well. And then after they left, I had probably the better part of a month then feeding into Christmas. And my brother was coming out for another 3 weeks for Christmas. And he was bringing two of his friends with him who played golf with him, a couple, Rita and Dave. So they all came out, and Christmas was just 3 weeks of going out to restaurants and then playing golf and just getting on with the work and stuff. And then when he was just when Phil left in the early part of January, that's my brother Phil, and stablemate Alan Fowler and his family came out for 2.5 weeks, and they moved into the villa, which coincided quite nicely because I was due to go to Kenya. So we had the running with the Kenya experiencing, running with the Kenyans. And we had, I think, about 12, 13 people on that 2-week trip. And I was also running my coaching course, Coach to Coaches. So this is for people that want to become running coaches. And we had 3 people doing that course, quite an intense course over the 2 weeks. Talk more about that in future podcasts. And we had some long stayers in the guest house as well. And that was Richard James, Liz Weeks, Connor Smallboy, O'Brien, and Oisin the Giant Spillane. Big crack shout out to Oisin as well, who ran in the European Cross Country Championships. Can't remember, I think it was 25th, 27th, something like that. And he won the Irish Under 23 Championship. So congratulations to him and his coach, Rory Chesser. And Oisin's heading off to the States soon. So it's great to see Oisin progressing like that, because I was coached Oisin when he was in his school years. And to see him go on like this now is like really exciting. And he's going to have a great career ahead of him. So yeah, they were in the guest house, and then we had the, I think it was about 12, 13 people doing the trip. And a big shout out as well for Richard James and Liz Weeks, who organised everything for these guys, for the trips, from the transport to the outings and things, which freed me up so that I could do the coaching course. And on the coaching course, we had Paul Griffiths, Raf and Ashling, and they all did super well. In fact, they've all gone on now and they're really getting stuck into it. Ashling's coaching a 226 woman, and she's got a group of women that she's, you know, who are beginners. So she's got that sort of from both ends of the spectrum, like the elite end and beginners. And that's straight off the back of the, you know, within a week off the back of finishing the course. Paul is coaching quite a few people. He's growing his client base at the moment and doing really well. He's got a fantastic podcast as well, which I'll give a shout out to next week, because off the top of my head, I can't remember it because it's 6 o'clock in the morning. And Raf's doing quite nicely as well with his coaching clients and building that all up. And also a shout out to Mark O'Mahony, because he helped a bit with the coaching course and was coming in, because he'd attended my course, the pilot's one, about 18 months ago. And he's been very, very successful with his coaching since then. And he came in and explained about his experiences post the course. And that was pretty interesting for them to hear how Mark had done things. And Liz also dropped in. Now, Liz hadn't done my course, but she came in to give her sort of view on coaching and how she does it as well. So it's a pretty interesting couple of weeks. And a lot happened in those 2 weeks. But as they say, what happens on tour stays on tour, so I can't divulge too much about it. Needless to say, it was quite an interesting couple of weeks. So, and that feeds into, I suppose, why I am where I am at the moment. So with a couple of days left on the... Oh, and I took Mackenzie out to Mauritius as well, which was proved quite interesting and a good move. So the idea behind that was, with Mackenzie being a really good chef, and when you go to Kenya, the food tends to be a little bit bland, you know, so there's a lot of rice, beans and vegetables and things. But this time, actually, the chef was really, really good. And we brought Mackenzie along so he could help out, and we could throw in a few Mauritian dishes, which were delicious and worked really well. And Mackenzie got stuck in and worked with the chefs. But when we were about 3 days from the end, in fact, going back to Mackenzie had never been out in Mauritius before, never been on an aeroplane. So when we flew out, we were looking at the flights from Mauritius to Kenya, and it was €1,000 each for just a 4-hour flight economy, which I thought was a rip-off, whereas it was $1,500 to fly business class, but we had to fly up to Turkey and then down. So it was a long way around the houses, but obviously the business class experience for Mackenzie. So I thought, you know what, we're going to do that. So we did the business class one. It was only cost a little bit more, but it made the trip a lot more interesting, as I'm going to get to in a minute. So we flew up to Istanbul, stayed in the business lounge down there, and then down into Nairobi. And Mackenzie was loving it all, because obviously never been on the plane before. But then sort of 3 days before the end of the trip, I was thinking to myself, do you know what? Do I go back to Mauritius, where quite possibly the hardest man in Mauritius is waiting for me to have a little bit of a tear up? Now, if I were a few years younger, I would have taken it on. But, you know, at 59, I wasn't quite so sure. And he had, like, I don't know, how old is he, about 40 odd. I thought, nah, I think I might give that one a wide berth. So I thought I was going to go back to Mauritius and then come home in June, because my mum and dad's got their 60th wedding anniversary and we're having a big surprise party for that. So instead, I thought what I'll do is I'll zip on home up until June, and then work out where I'm going to be heading off to next and my adventures, which we're going to come to shortly. So I fired on home, flew up to Istanbul with Mackenzie, and this is where it starts to get a little bit more interesting. So I had to go out of the airport and come back in again because I changed my flight, you know, to come back to Ireland. And I told Mackenzie to go through the passport control, go to the business lounge, and I'd meet him there. So anyway, an hour later, I'm in the business lounge waiting for Mackenzie, and he's not there. 2 hours, 3 hours, I think, where the hell is he? So I had to go hunting for him, couldn't find him anywhere. So I thought he must have been arrested or something. Transpired, to use that word again, that he was in a different lounge. He got the wrong lounge, and I managed to track him down and find him and bring him across to the proper lounge. But the thing was, he was a few sheets to the wind, and I had to warn him. I said, look, you know, your flight's at 2 o'clock in the morning, it's 5 o'clock in the evening, they're not going to let you on the plane, you know, if you're drunk. And then he was pretty well gone, and he started getting a little bit arse, shall we say. We had a little bit of a lover's tiff, so to speak, and he stormed off. So I was just sitting there laughing, thinking, I know what's going to happen. They're not going to let him on the plane. Anyway, 1:30 in the morning, I get a phone call from Mackenzie. John, I'm sorry, come and help me. So I had to go and find him. And he said to me that they wouldn't let him on the plane because I wasn't with him, because I'd paid for the tickets, which was bullshit. Because he had his boarding pass and his passport, and they hadn't let him on because he was absolutely hammered. So I had to buy another ticket for him, which I wasn't too pleased about, obviously. But the problem was, there wasn't a flight for him that he could get on for another 2 days. So he had to spend 2 days in Istanbul airport in the business lounge. So that was Mackenzie there. And then I flew on home. Anyway, got home where I am now. Mackenzie got back safely in the end. And then we had somebody coming out to the villa for 2 weeks at the end of February. So I said to Mackenzie, what we would do whenever anybody was coming to the villa, like Mackenzie and his girlfriend Brenda, they would come in, and the three of us, we'd like, you know, do a deep clean of the house, make sure everything was spotless and that sort of thing. So Mackenzie knew what to do. So I said, look, I want you to go and do all of that. These people are coming. So he phoned me, told me everything was done. But in the meantime, what happened, there'd been two cyclones in Mauritius, and there'd been some flooding into the villa, which he said he'd cleaned up and sorted everything out. Anyway, the guests arrived, I give them a call, make sure everything was all right, and they said no, the villa was an absolute mess, and which I couldn't understand, because the villa's brand new. It's be very, very difficult to make a mess of the villa, because, you know, I've been living in there pretty much by myself for about 6 months, apart from the guests coming, and, you know, it was pretty clean and stuff. And normally whenever Mackenzie and Brenda came in, you know, they got everything done pretty well. So I couldn't understand what was going on. So the person sent me some pictures. The oven was a complete mess, the fridge, the bathroom. It was clear Mackenzie hadn't cleaned it and probably made a mess. So I couldn't understand what had gone on. Anyway, it turns out, rather than transpires, I found out that Mackenzie had a big party in the house when he got back, and he'd been renting it out for parties for other people, you know, for a few weeks to make some money and stuff, which is bang out of order. But I think his thought process was that with me going back to Ireland, he thought I wouldn't be going back to Mauritius, so he'd make the best out of it while, you know, he could, which was a mistake, because I was paying him still while I wasn't there, and I would have carried on paying him and looking after him and supporting him, you know, till he got sorted out and things. So in the end, I had to say goodbye to Mackenzie, let him go, and that's that. And I don't know what he's doing now. I had the chat with him, the hard chat, and just said, you know, you've taken the piss, basically, lad. That's it. You know, I would have helped you and stuff. Now you've got to find your own way. So that's what happened with Mackenzie. Meanwhile, I'm back here in Ireland. And whilst I was out in Kenya, I was chatting to a few people because I knew that I was going to go away again at the beginning of July. This time it's going to be for quite a while longer. Stay tuned about that. There's more to be revealed, because what we're going to do is we're going to peel the onion slowly rather than give you all the information in one go. So, yeah, I'm going to be heading off at the beginning of July after my mum and dad's anniversary party. Where am I going? Well, I'm speaking to Mark O'Mahony, who we're going to be talking a little bit about in a moment, who was a running coach, and to a guy called Eric, who's out in Hong Kong. Eric's a tax expert out in Hong Kong, and we're talking about, you know, the best places to go. And Eric said to me about Bangkok, and I said, nah, I'm not going to Bangkok, it's too crazy. And as a 59-year-old, I don't want people looking at me thinking I'm out there for the sex tourism thing and all that sort of stuff. But he said it's not like that at all. You know, it's a big sort of city with, you know, different parts and things. But then he mentioned a place called Koh Samui, which I'd never heard of, which you probably have all heard of. I've never been anywhere I've never been to Thailand or Asia. And then Mark said it about it as well, that because he'd spent, I think, 3 or 4 visits there doing the Muay Thai and kickboxing and stuff. And he said it's perfect tropical island, but beautiful weather, beautiful beaches, nice restaurants, not too crazy. And if I were to stay in a place called Lamai, which is not in the main tourist area, it's main where the families go and the expats, he said it would probably be perfect for me. So I've done a lot of research on it, and that's where I'm going. So I'm heading out there on the 2nd of July, and I'll be going there till the 28th of December. And then from there, because I have to be in Kenya for the middle of January, because we've got another running with the Kenyan experience thing going on. But I'm going to be popping across to the Maldives for 2 weeks. And then from there across to Kenya for 2.5 weeks to do the trip and the coaching course, and then back to Koh Samui. So there's lots to tell you about all of that, which I'll, I suppose, like I said earlier, I'll peel the onion slowly and let you know what's going on with all of that and why I'm doing it, etc. Not too much too soon, just giving you the outline. And that feeds in then, I suppose, to the podcast and where we left off and what the future podcasts are going to be about. So I think, if I remember rightly, because I haven't listened to the previous podcast, I think we left off, we were doing the pillars of marathon training, the 8 pillars. Now, the previous podcasts, Marathon Part 1, 2, etc., and Hills, are all part of the outline, I suppose, of the book that I'm writing about the marathon. So, but the book's a lot more detailed and a lot different to the podcast. But some of the content from the podcast is like snippets from the book. So what I think the best thing to do is, rather than carry on with that and, you know, tell you everything that's going to be in the book, is wait, you've got a taste of it now. And I know a lot of you will want to buy the book. It's not going to be too expensive. I'm going to do it quite cheaply, fire it out there to you. And then you can have the book. And just on the book as well, it's not going to be like any running book that's written before, because to be quite honest with you, most running books are absolutely diabolically boring. You know, with the cut and paste cookie programs and all that sort of stuff, and they're all the same. This is going to be a lot different. But I'll tell you more again about the book as we get closer to it and why it's a lot different. I think you can imagine why it might be, just from the narrative voice and through the content as well. I think that there isn't a running book out there that is like this. It's going to be completely different, but we'll talk more about that another time. So where does that leave us then with the podcast and what we're going to talk about? One of the main things that people ask me is about breaking 3 hours for the marathon. And I think over the years, I've taken about 600 and now probably 640 odd people, I think, to sub 3. And then probably over 150 to sub 230. So they're the two areas that people want to know about breaking 230 and breaking 3 hours. So once the guys break the 3 hours, it's what do they do then? And for most people, they kind of get stuck and plateau in that 248 to 259 area because they don't know what to do. And what they start doing is then just doing loads more mileage, and that's not the answer. You know, really, I've got people who are breaking 230 for the marathon and they only train 6 times a week. You don't need to train any more to break 230 than you do to break 3 hours. It's just what you do. It's slightly more nuanced, but that's kind of what we're going to be talking about. And how we're going to do that is within the stable, I've plucked out, I think, 10 people who are looking to break 230 for the marathon this year. Now, quite a lot of them are going to be going for that in Valencia. And then I'm going to be plucking out probably 10, 15 people who are looking to break 3 hours this year for the marathon as well. And they're all different. The way that they train is different. And their lives are obviously completely different as well. So I think it's interesting to maybe have a look at it from a like more detailed approach on each individual athlete. Because what a lot of coaches do, they just have their system for breaking 3 hours and things like this. Whereas what you've got to do is you've got to look at the individual as a whole and their life, their work, their injury background, their experience, their nutrition, their sleep, all of these sorts of things. And they might be working shifts. How do you work the training in? And what sort of volume can they do? What sort of sessions can they do? So I'm going to pick out real life examples of people that have broken 3 hours. So like I've got people that have gone from 4 hours to 2:57 in 10 months. So I've got, and on this cycle now, I've got two guys. I've got one guy who's going to go from, I think, 3:12 to probably 2:26 in Valencia, and another guy who's going to go from 3:22 to probably 2:29. So, you know, we're going to talk about their real life experiences. And what I'll do next week is I'll talk about all of these individuals that people we're going to, you know, go through and look at their training. But just to kickstart that, just to give you, whet your appetite a little bit, the first person we're going to talk about is the legendary Mark O'Mahony. And Mark started life as a bit of a Dell boy. He was he came out of school and was a debt collector, going around chasing people who, you know, people who were on drugs and had no money, and beating them up and taking the money off them. He didn't really, but he used to go and collect debts and things. And he fancied himself as a bit of a hard man, so he took up a bit of the kickboxing, went out to Koh Samui to live, and did Thai boxing, and had a fight in, I don't know where it was, in some big place. Got his shins, his tibia smashed to bits, and had to be Kazivac'd out and sent home. And that was the end of his kickboxing days. In fairness, he was pretty tasty. I mean, I'm taking the hand out of him a bit, so pretty good. I think he said, did he fight for the Irish title and got beaten in the Irish final or something like that? Anyway, but yeah, he can handle himself anyway. But he couldn't handle the man in Mauritius that who wants to have a little tear up with me. And that's part of the reason why I'm going to Koh Samui. I'm going to do a bit of the old kickboxing in Muay Thai so I can go back to Mauritius and take care of your man. Not really. So anyway, let's have a look at Mark. So Mark wasn't a runner. He was a bit of a kickboxer. He come back, but smashed up tibia, didn't know anything about running, and dived into like a 100-miler just to try and complete it. That was a disaster. I think he got round and did it and all that sort of stuff. And he was running around in the dark, not knowing what he was doing. He contacted me, you know, and he wanted to do the 24-hour running. So we had a good chat. He won a 12-hour race in a pretty decent time. And he was looking to then go and break the Irish record for 24 hours, which, you know, he definitely had the capability of doing it, or the ability to do it. But he had a long-term problem with his tailbone, which nearly every physio in Ireland, chiropractor, osteopath tried to fix and weren't able to sort out. So he was off for the better part of a year. And then he discovered this athletic coach in the States who specialised in these secret techniques of fixing people. And Mark had to sign a non-disclosure agreement about the techniques that he was using to fix him. And in fairness, I was laughing at him, saying, Mark, you're a madman. But in fairness, it's worked. And after, you know, trying everybody else, this guy's got Mark sorted out. So Mark was able to get back running in December there, you know, starting off with run-walk, you know, one-minute run, jog, one-minute walk. And then by the time he got out to Kenya, he was able to, in January, he was running kind of properly and up to sort of like 65 minutes easy, doing long runs and starting doing hill blasts and things. And he said to me that he wanted to break 3 hours for the marathon and then go into a 24-hour race. And he was at 3:22. And I said, Mark, you know, you're mad. What's the point of breaking 3 hours? You could, you know, run for Ireland and the World Championships in the 24 hours. That's a little bit better than like breaking 3 hours for the marathon. And I said, and it's pretty easy to run for Ireland in the 24 hours as well, because the standard's so poor and it's a bit of a niche thing, and it's all old people that generally that do it. So, you know, he kind of agreed to that. But something I noticed when I started giving him his training, because I put him on the super base and I gave him the hill blast, and he had a lot more power than I kind of realised, and a lot more strength and speed. And what happened is he was doing his tempo runs, starting off his tempo runs, I don't know, let's say, we'll just pluck this out of the air for now, because we'll go into more detail on the specifics, but, you know, he was doing a 20-minute sort of threshold type run at 7-minute pace. He's now doing, like, his 60-minute long tempo runs at 6-minute mile pace. So that's the improvement he's made. And again, this is down to the hill blast, sort of recruiting the fast twitch fibres, improving his running economy, his power and his strength and his stride and things. And he's definitely going to be on for breaking 2:30 come Valencia in December. So we're going to have a good look at Mark. And because he's a running coach as well, it's great, because having the conversations with him about how he's going to do it. Now, it's an outside chance, I've got to be honest. As you know, there's nothing guaranteed in running, obviously, which brings me to something at the end about the competition as well and some news. But Mark, I think, has got a really good shout at breaking 2:30. So we'll have a little look at that. Now, talking about nothing being guaranteed, there's a couple of things going to happen now. So with the relaunch of the podcast, I'm actually going to do a money back guarantee on coaching for anybody that joins in April. So basically what we do is we sit down, we talk what your goals are, as long as they're realistic and stuff and we agree on them, I will give you a money back guarantee that you will hit your goals. There's a few caveats in there, of course, but then we can talk about those things. But this, I think, it's a pretty good deal, and I don't think there's a coach on the planet doing it. I'm that confident. So there you go. So all you have to do is give me a shout on that. And then as well, competition wise, I'm giving away two-week holidays to Koh Samui in January 2025. So that's the accommodation. You just have to sort your flights out. A bit similar to the Mauritius one and the Caribbean one. And along the way as well, we're going to be giving away super shoes and things like that as well. So stay tuned for those. So I suppose we need a question for the competition. So the question will be, what was the name of the guy who was the chef that worked for me in Mauritius and came to Kenya and wasn't allowed on the aeroplane? That's not too difficult, is it, even for you guys? I think even I could get that one right. So that's the competition. Okay, all you do is the usual thing. Drop it to me either on Instagram. You can hit me through Strava. Well, not through Strava, because then everyone will see. It's my email address, stazastable1965@gmail.com. Go to stazastable.com on the website. Or just drop me a WhatsApp message, the code for Ireland 00353, and then my number is 083-043-5669. See, giving out my number there for you guys. And then there's the big question that you're all asking: who is she? Shall I tell you, or shall I wait till the next podcast? No, I'm going to tell you. So I pop a picture on Instagram of a woman. Her name's Nutch. And she's from Thailand and working in Vietnam in the sweatshops with Nike and Adidas, Mizuno, Foot Locker. Basically, she's the manager of exports there, so they make all the, you know, all the stuff for them and send them out. Not she's actually going to be coming to work with Staza Stable because we've got some big things happening that are going to be launched sort of come July. Lots of new things that a lot of people aren't doing in the running world. But I'm not going to give too much away at the moment. And I need some help with that. So she's going to help me. She's got all the kind of right expertise, not because she's worked in the export world and in clothing. I'm not doing anything with clothing and all of that sort of stuff. But there are a few things where I need somebody with that kind of, with her background, because she's got some other skills as well. So you're all thinking something else, weren't you? So, and she's not a lady boy either. So I know people have been dropping me messages about that. But no, she's going to be working on like developing a few of the projects that I've got. I'm also bringing my brother in. He's going to be helping a lot and making some big investments into some of the things that we're going to be doing. So I'll be talking about that as well. And that's pretty exciting. So that's where we are for now. So again, apologies for being out missing in action for so long. But I haven't even addressed that why I didn't do the podcast. Really simply is I couldn't do the podcast in the villa because it was brand new. It was like an echo chamber. The quality of the recordings was terrible. There was too much noise from wild dogs and lions and tigers and bears and monkeys and things running around in the forest next to the house. And yes, I know there are no tigers in Mauritius. But yeah, that was the reason why I couldn't do it. Just couldn't get the space to do the podcast, you know, where it could come out with reasonable enough quality. Hopefully this one comes out okay, and hopefully you enjoy it. But next week, we're going to kick off with a much, much more detailed look at Mark and then all of the other stablemates who we're going to be looking at, looking to break 2:30 and 3 hours. Hopefully you'll find that interesting and specific to your needs. And if you've got any questions, as usual, just fire them into me, and I'm more than happy to answer them. Take care. Speak to you soon.